My guest at this time is South Carolina Congressman Mick Mulvaney. He has joined us on a number of occasions to talk about critical fiscal debates. He was also with us a number of times in the lead up to the debt ceiling deal in the summer of 2011, explaining why the deal that ultimately passed was not right for America. The failure of the super committee and the impending fiscal cliff would certainly bear out his position from last year. So he joins us now to talk about what he would like to see as the way forward in this high-stakes negotiation with just a couple of weeks left until the end of the year, and what would be unacceptable from his position. And Congressman, thanks very much for being with us.
It's always good to be here. Thanks for having me again.
I'm sure you're not walking around the halls of Congress saying, "I told you so," but what as you see this list of taxes that are set to rise and other aspects of the fiscal cliff that are about to take effect, how much more complicated is this situation based on what happened last year?
Yeah, you know, actually, on the "I told you so" thing, Barney Frank is leaving, and one of the things, of course, that we'll miss is his candor. Obviously, he and I disagree on a lot of things philosophically, but I saw in one of his going away interviews, he said, "You know, everybody says they hate to say they told you so. The truth of the matter is, people love saying it." It just makes them look like they knew what they were talking about in the first place. Obviously, it doesn't advance the debate. So you're right. We'll move on and look at what we've got, which is a real difficult situation. I mean, I don't know if we've been in this situation. Well, I'll take that back. We were in this situation 2 years ago. And a lot of people forget that one of the reasons we're here now is that when we faced almost an identical situation 2 years ago, Congress simply passed a two-year short-term fix. This so-called fiscal cliff, with the exception of the sequester portion of it, came up in December of 2010. And instead of fixing it then, Congress chose to sort of kick the can down the road, to use an overused phrase, and so here we are. I honestly, anybody who tells you that they know where it's going, I think is probably making things up. I think the one thing that you can probably count on is that taxes are going up either a little or a lot, and that's extraordinarily disappointing to me as a conservative.
Given that reality that you just laid out, taxes going up a little or a lot, does that change then what you find acceptable given the realities on the ground?
No, I mean, I look at this sort of, you know, you mentioned the debt ceiling. I look at this through sort of the same prism. People always ask us, what are you willing to do to get a deal? What are you willing to do to compromise? And I say, look, go back to the debt ceiling. I voted to raise the debt ceiling. It's something that I never thought that I would do when I came to Congress, but I voted to raise the debt ceiling as part of cut, cap, and balance, which we believed, as conservatives, fixed the problem. And that was the key. It wasn't a deal. It was a solution. Washington's really good at doing deals, not so good at solutions most of the times. But there we had a real solution. So we voted for something we never thought we'd vote for, which was to raise the debt ceiling. I look at the current situation through the same prism, which is, show me something that fixes the problem, and then, you know, I'll look at how I need to vote to get that done. And that's not just this little short-term problem, by the way. This little fiscal cliff, and I blame Ben Bernanke because he gave the name to it, is really not the big problem. The big problem, obviously, is the debt, the deficit. Fix the problem, and I think you'd be surprised at what conservative Republicans will vote for. Don't fix the problem and don't expect us to change.
What would you consider to be real solutions on this front, whether it's spending, entitlements? What specifically would be good enough to get your vote?
I think you got to see real entitlement reform. And by the way, you can end the conversation there if you take Nancy Pelosi at her word from yesterday. You know, she had a press conference yesterday and said no to entitlement cuts. She said, now we have clarity on that. Well, that's pretty clear, I guess. When someone tells you they have clarity, it means it's clear in their mind, at least. And if we're not going to get entitlement reform, and I hate to use that word entitlement cuts, but if we don't change the way we do entitlement programs, it's unlikely that we're going to have any type of agreement on this. If Democrats expect Republicans to compromise on something that is an A1 priority for us, which is taxes and tax rates, they have to be willing to compromise on something that is an A1 priority for them, which is entitlements. They take entitlements off the table, as Ms. Pelosi did yesterday, and I see really no way to get to any type of agreement.
What do you see as smart reforms for entitlement? And I guess Medicare's at the top of that list.
Sure, we offer them. One of the things that goes so underreported is that Republicans actually did a lot of really good work last year on entitlement reform. You look to the Ryan budget, look to the RC budget, both of which I participated in. We talk about slowly raising the retirement age. We talk about chaining the cost of living adjustments. Talk about means testing, which is a fancy way of saying rich people will pay more or get less. Republicans, you know, have already taken that very difficult step for us as a party. So we've offered real ideas on how to fix Medicare, similar changes in Social Security. We've talked about the block granting of Medicaid to the states on the Medicaid front. So we've given specific ideas, and instead of getting a negotiated response, we get a door slammed in our face and told, no, thank you. That's not, again, not an avenue towards getting a deal done.
What's your take on the latest offer that Speaker Boehner has given to the White House? There's certainly been some on the right who have suggested that there's not enough of what you just suggested, spending and entitlement changes in there. So what's your overall take on what he's currently advocating?
You know, I applaud what John is doing. You know, I've been critical of him in the past, critical of some of the things that he's proposed. In all frankness, and I would tell him this if he was sitting next to me, I think he's wasting his time. I don't think the president wants a deal. It appears to me more and more that the more I read on this, that the left wing of his party does not want a deal. Howard Dean was on TV, I think, last week saying, you know, the truth of the matter is everybody's taxes have to go up. That's what a lot of the Democrats want. I get the feeling, based on their actions, again, believe what people do, not what they say. What they're doing here is essentially giving us an unreal offer of $1.6 trillion in tax increases, new stimulus, extended unemployment insurance, an extended payroll tax cut that undermines Social Security. That's not an offer. That's essentially, if I come to you, Greg, and I say, look, I want to buy your house, and I'll give you a dollar for it, you slam the door in my face. And that's essentially what the Democrats are doing. So I know John is trying. He's doing his best. But sometimes there's no dealing with people who don't want to be dealt with.
And so if that's the case, if the administration is willing or even hoping to go over the cliff, and the only way around it is to raise taxes without the changes in spending and entitlements that we've talked about for the wealthier Americans and just raise their taxes, do Republicans have to make that choice, or do you go over the cliff?
No, I think you go over the cliff. I really do. I think you turn to the American people and say, look, the president had it in his ability to keep your tax rates low. But since he didn't get his pound of flesh out of this small group of people over here, you're paying for it. And I think folks will realize that. I think they know what they voted for. They voted for somebody who ultimately was going to raise their taxes. One of the best lines I heard during the presidential campaign was Paul Ryan look at the camera and say, you know, you may say you want to raise taxes on the rich right now, but be careful because pretty soon the rich is going to be you. It just depends on how you want to define it. You know, it used to be $1 million. Now it's $250. Next year it's $150. This is a president who wants to raise taxes. Think about that for a second. What are we fighting over? The Bush tax cuts, which the Democrats hated in the first place. They said they didn't want it. They said it really did help the middle class. All it did was a giveaway to the rich Republican friends. They didn't want these things in the first place. So to think now that they're going to go to the mat to defend those portions of the Bush tax cuts is a joke. Plus, what else do they get? They get massive defense reductions. The holy grail for many within the extreme left wing of their party. They get a lot of what they want, which circles us back to right where we started. One of the reasons I voted against the debt ceiling in the first place was that anybody who wanted to sit down and go over the possible outcomes, this was staring us in the face as long ago as a year and a half.
So is this a fait accompli, or do you think there might be some way to convince the White House to find a common ground?
I think a lot of it depends on what the White House wants to do. Do they want to lead? Does the president actually want to lead the nation, or does he continue to want to be an ideologue of the new American left? Does he want to, you know, give in to Nancy Pelosi and the left wing of his party, or does he want to sort of chart a middle ground similar to what, you know, Bill Clinton did? That's one of the first great tests of his second term. Is he going to be, you know, Bill Clinton, or is he going to be Barack Obama from the first term? And I think if he decides that he wants to be his, you know, his own man, be his own leader, lead the nation down a particular path, we've got a chance to get something that everybody can live with. If he decides instead that it's progressivism or the cliff, then it looks like it's the cliff.
Congressman, not super optimistic, but it's a good assessment, I think, of where we are. Thank you very much for your time today.
I wish it could be different, but that's based upon a little bit of experience, a little bit of observation, which is always dangerous.
Well, and you're certainly in there to know. Thank you very much. And South Carolina Republican Congressman Mick Mulvaney represents his state's 5th Congressional District, member of the House Budget Committee. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.